The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International.
It was out of my control. There was not an event that had happened,
okay,
which is what makes panic such a challenging situation. Well, why are you panicked? Well, there's no reason. Your mind finds a reason to be panicked. So I was convinced that if anybody ever found out what I was really battling, I would lose my marriage, I would lose my church, I would lose my life.
Pastor Toby Slough opens up about his battle with anxiety next.
Welcome to Life Today. I'm Randy Robinson. Sheila's here with me as always.
Hello.
And a ring the bell, win a prize.
I know. Yes, that was a very exciting start.
We're excited that you guys are here with us. It's been a tough year, and we get that. And that's why I think today's program is really going to help you. We have a guest with us who is a pastor celebrating 20 years this year in a fabulous church here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He has a new book out called Not Yet, and he is addressing the very real issues that we are facing, anxiety, for some people, depression, and in his words, all the other crap that comes knocking at your door. Would you welcome Toby Slough?
Thank you so much. It's great. I'm honored to be here with you today.
We appreciate this. Now, this is a tough topic, the deeper issues here, and I know that it's one, Sheila, that you've dealt with. Let's get right into this, because a lot of people are feeling a lot of things they're having some difficulty with.
One of the things I love, Toby, about the way you write and about, you know, who you are from people who know you, is that you're always ready to shine the brightest light into the darkest corners of the church, that to talk about the things that we don't talk about. But writing about anxiety or depression, it's not just a cerebral thing from you. It's something you have lived. How long has that been part of your journey?
Now, over 25 years. I kid, people will say, well, how long did it take you to write the book? I'd say about 25 years. And I believed when I first was diagnosed with a panic disorder, which quite honestly, 25 years ago, you'd never heard of. I mean, no one was talking about those kind of things. I was just under the assumption I would write a book one day about how God had completely delivered me from that in my life. And little did I know that 26 years later, on the 20th anniversary, and as you said, of our church family, we'd be releasing a book talking about being in that not yet of still having those battles on a regular basis in my life.
Tell us a little bit about the origins of this. Is this something that you have always dealt with, or was there something that started it? Give us an idea of where this all came from.
You know, one of the questions I get, Randy, is, well, is it spiritual? Is it emotional? Is it physical? And the answer is yes. It's all of those things, really. The best way it was ever described to me was, if your house burned down and a couple of weeks later a fire truck pulled up beside you at a light, your heart would begin to race because it brought back that memory, which would be what we'd call being human, right? Mm-hmm. But panic is different. Panic is your heart begins to race for no reason at all. And now, looking back in my childhood years, I think I battled this, just had no box to put it in.
Right.
Kind of shove it down for a while until that one fateful night when my heart started to race, my hands started to shake, and I sat straight up in the bed and decided I would walk it off. This is, you know, the man thing. I'm just going to walk the hall. And 7 hours later, no exaggeration of walking the hall, just as exhausted as I had been the day when I'd laid down that night. And I got in a pattern of, I would feel it rising up in me. And it was out of my control. There was not an event that had happened,
okay,
which is what makes panic such a challenging situation. Well, why are you panicked? Well, there's no reason. Your mind finds a reason to be panicked.
Yeah. Did you see a doctor? Did you get any kind of medical diagnosis?
I did. I finally... the short version is, I grew up in a very performance-based, not only religion, but a home. I had a father who was a high school coach. In the 60s, you know how high school coaches were, more, better, faster. And somewhere along the way, I decided that perfection was the goal and there was no other option. And come on, how many of us know that you come to a place in life where you, in your heart, in your head, you know that's not reality, but your heart hasn't followed suit. And so after 17 days of not being able to sleep, not being able to eat, not being able to function, I finally went to see a counselor. And it was the third session there when he said, you have an anxiety disorder, and gave me that diagnosis at that time. So I had a box to put that in, where now I could begin to discover and peel back the layers of what got me there in the first place.
Did you experience any of that? I know in my early days of being diagnosed with clinical depression, there was a lot of shame attached to that, because it wasn't something we talked about. And I remember even going to fill my prescription and hoping that nobody would see me, because I didn't want it. Was that something you had to work through?
In a huge way.
Yeah.
I would go to the counselor's office, and he would say, well, here's a room for the pastors. Well, why is there a room for the pastors? Well, so no one else will have to see you.
And wow. It was,
again, you think of that kind of thinking, right? And so I was convinced that if anybody ever found out what I was really battling, I would lose my marriage, I would lose my church, I would lose my life. And you get in this, whether it's depression, which is, by the way, one of the reasons I was so excited to be here. Your book has helped me so much to just connect at a level of pain, you know?
Yeah, I do know.
But it's, you get to this place where you have a desire to be fully loved. And that's a high desire. And you also have this high fear that if you're fully known, you'll never be fully loved.
Right.
And the problem is, you're never fully loved until you're fully known. And so that's, Randy, that's the vice grip you get in. I want so much to let somebody know. I want someone to know that I'm struggling, but I'm worried that there will be some kind of break in our relationship, that I somehow have let you down if I'm less than in some area of my life.
It's interesting that you say that about her openness, and she's been tremendously open, and I know it's helped a lot of people. It seems like there's this diabolical lie that says, if you're not perfect, you're not qualified to be in ministry or to help other people or be a father or to be a wife or whatever. And that if you just can't tell anybody, and yet the Bible says, confess your sins, but I think that covers our faults, our struggles to one another. Why? So that you can be healed.
Exactly.
Being able to talk about it, has that been a really critical part of being able to even cope with it?
It has been the most critical part. Mm. I think the thing that has broken my heart the most is when I share, and I've shared this literally all over this country and other countries, this story through the years, that, by the way, in 2003 began on this stage, in this program, when I began to talk about in the early days. What broke my heart, though, was how many people were saying how courageous this was. There's no courage in me. It was survival.
Right.
Like, if my desire is, again, I want to be fully loved, you have to be fully known. And so the greatest weapon I have is the words of James that you quoted, is to confess. This is an area I'm struggling in. I'm not where I ought to be.
Yeah.
And that, for me, is a huge part of finding freedom, even when you face that battle.
What do you say to people who, because I know I've had this, if you had more faith, or, you know, God wants to give you a miracle, how do you address that? Because I get so many heartbreaking letters from women saying that, well, I got one the other day, my dad committed suicide, I've been told he's in hell, which just drives me nuts.
Yes.
My dad committed suicide, and I know that Christ carried him home. What do you say to that kind of ignorance in the truest sense?
Well, the first thing I would say is I tell them stories about people I have prayed for, and that they have emailed me and said, I felt something lifting. Huh. And we go, okay, let's think about this for a moment. I prayed for the vessel God used is one who is still in the middle of that battle. And so God's ways are not our ways. The other thing I would say is you would never tell a diabetic that if you had more faith, just pray. This is an illness. And as long as we can begin to understand this is an illness, can God heal? Of course he can heal. It's well within his power. I have come to the place, there's not a day goes by, I don't ask God to lift, especially in this season.
Me too.
But I don't have to have him do it for me to believe that he's real.
That's huge. That's huge right there.
I believe, heal spiritually, mm-hmm. was when I came to the place to understand that how ridiculous it was for me to put conditions on a relationship with a God that loved me unconditionally. Mm-hmm. Like, God, you'll never believe what I'll do if you'll do this. You'll never believe what I'll do if you will do this. Mm-hmm. And that, when you get into a place where I have to have this for you to be real, there's illness there. There's a self-perpetuating. So I believe God can heal me. I just don't need him to heal me for me to believe that he's real, that he's alive, that he's working in other people's lives.
Yeah, this is very difficult for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I know I've had these discussions. And the title of your book is Not Yet. We affirm that God can. I think the hard part is why hasn't he? But yet we also know that there are biblical examples where he let people stay in the struggle because he was working something that he wanted to work through the struggle. Where do you land on the, you know, God, why haven't you? Will you ever, you know? Those tough questions.
Well, here's two things I believe. One, I believe that freedom is not the absence of depression or anxiety. It's the presence of Jesus.
Yes.
So when I begin to redefine what it means to be free, freedom doesn't mean you don't battle depression from time to time, that my heart doesn't race from time to time. Freedom is the presence of Christ in the midst of those situations, the strength, the hope, the power. That's what freedom is. Mm. And then you go to the life of Paul. You know, I was able to go to Greece a couple of years ago, just the grace of the Lord, some generous people, and go on a trip following the footsteps of Paul. And they said, we're going to see all the places he wrote these famous sayings. I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength.
Right.
We never found the plaque that said, I pleaded with the Lord and he said, no, my grace is sufficient. My power is made perfect in weakness. Nobody puts that on a mug and sells it. No, I was begging God for this thorn in my foot. God mm-hmm. said, no, my grace is sufficient. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The greatest church leader this side of the cross said, God said no to the thing I wanted the most.
Wow. Mm.
And yet he lived in freedom.
Yeah, and many of the words that he wrote that we're encouraged by, he wrote from prison.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I would imagine when you sat down to write Not Yet, it was before we were living in the biggest yacht, Not Yet, that any of us have ever known. How are you, like, as a pastor during this time, how are you being able to be there for your people? And what do you see people experiencing? Because there seems to be so much despair, genuine despair.
Yes, it is. And I had no idea we'd live in this moment. But the book is about living in uncertainty. The book is about, can you flourish? Not just get by, but can you flourish when you're not sure what the end of the story is going to be? And so in our church family, there's been such a repetitive nature to this message of, we believe God can do anything, but we don't need God to do something to believe that he's real, that I think it's better equipped us.
Yeah.
In other words, it's not a programmed Christianity that if you do this, God will do this. So we hang on to Romans 8:28.
Mm-hmm.
When everything is uncertain, what are we certain of? That God is working to bring good.
Yeah.
That there's something God is doing amongst us, in us. It's not a lot of fun. It feels like crap. But God, what he's going to bring out of that is going to be something powerful. I think that's what hope is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a phrase, I want to get it right, in your book that I found was interesting. I think it was unforced rhythms of grace.
Yes.
It's an interesting phrase. What exactly do you mean by that?
I mean that because of this thorn in the flesh the Lord has given me, if I can use some Pauline theology, there are things that I have got to do. There's got to be a part of the rhythm of my life for me to experience the fullness of God's presence and power, no matter what's going on. And I think this is what Jesus was saying when he said, are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion, as Eugene Peterson? Mm-hmm. You know, come to me and you will recover your life.
Mm.
let me teach you the unforced rhythms of grace. And for me, the unforced rhythms of grace is a perspective that when I practice these things in my life, I'm going to be more open to God's presence that was always there. What is that for you? Well, I just think where we've made a mistake is this isn't a cookie cutter
right.
approach.
Yeah.
That there are ways that you experience and are aware of God's presence that someone else is not.
Right. So when you said when you practice these things, your things may not be my things.
Exactly.
What were some of your things though? I'm curious.
Well, for me, there are things like the water is one of those things for me. There's something for me about a connection with God on the water. And so I live very close to the water. And I'm telling you, Randy, it has saved my life.
Mm. I totally get that.
It's literally saved my life. Mm-hmm. In the midst of this pandemic, it saved my life. I know that in the middle of all this, that at the end of the day, I'm going to go down by that water. Mm-hmm. I'm going to turn on a worship song. Mm-hmm. And me and God are going to we can do some business together.
Yeah.
And that I'm going to need as much the next day as I had it that day. And so for me, time at the water is important. For somebody else, that's just water.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's the part, I think, of the beauty and the uniqueness of God meeting us right where we're at.
One of the things that I've been doing, because most mornings when I wake up at the moment, I tend to feel pretty down. Mm-hmm. So I go out my little balcony and I read a psalm out loud. Because there's something about my ears hearing what my eyes are reading that reminds me of what's always true, no matter what might be true at the moment. But you're talking here about the I am list.
Yes.
I love that. Talk to us a little about that.
I have a dear pastor friend in another state that I called him one day and just said, I'm struggling. And I broke down. And he said, I want you to go on the internet. I want you to Google the 40 I ams. I want you to take index cards and write them out and begin to say them out loud. And I still have those index cards now almost 20 years later.
Wow.
Where I wrote the 40 statements of who God says that I am. And I have found that because our faith is verbal, so when I say these things out loud, that there's a power that is released in my life. I have found, Sheila, that the ones that are the hardest for me to say are the very ones I need to be declaring with conviction in that day.
Yeah.
And it's not like, oh, I need to fool myself into believing this. No. It's, no, I'm going to agree with God. I'm going to agree that this is who I am, even though I don't feel like I am. One of the ways my wife knows when I'm in a battle is I'm sitting at the table and I'm throwing those cards. I'm going to push my way through this by declaring what God has said to be true.
When I was in the hospital, because at nighttime it was the hardest for me. That's when I would feel the most hopeless. And I would literally drag myself out of the bed, plant my feet on the floor in my room and say, I believe I will live to see the goodness of the Lord and the land of the living.
Yes.
And I didn't always feel it, but I knew it was true and I declared it to be true. That's why I'm so grateful you wrote this book. I think it's going to help so many people, Toby.
Yeah, I hope so.
Before we wrap up, I want to give you an opportunity just to speak to someone who's been watching and clinging to this program thinking, is there hope for me? Is what they're saying possibly true? What would you say to that person who's just barely hanging on by a thread right now?
I would say, I know how you feel. I know what it's like to feel less than. You have more power than you think you have. You have more authority than you think you have. I know what you're thinking. How am I going to take another step? You're going to take a step now like you took a step yesterday, one at a time. And God will give you enough strength for that moment. That it is in the struggle that God does His best work. And you do not have to like the struggle to believe that God is doing something in you. You are not alone. He understands what you're facing. That's my heart, really, about not yet. Is that people wouldn't feel alone.
Yeah. And I just want to remind you that we're always here for you. Never be afraid to reach out and say, this is what's happening. You know, we're here. We're here for you. And you're not alone. God is with you. And one of the things that we love doing here, Toby, is that we love to have our eyes open to the needs of other people, too. Because sometimes in reaching out to someone else, you find yourself smiling. So we have something we'd love to show you, and then we'll tell you how you can get involved. Would you please watch this?
We're approaching the time of the year when Life Outreach does its Christmas Shoes and Smiles campaign. The smiles are for corrective surgery, but what we're doing today is we're giving these young boys and young girls shoes for the very first time. You can actually see the importance of what we're doing, because look at this little girl, Veronica. She's got these sores on her feet already. She's obviously never owned a pair of shoes. She's been walking around bare feet.
Maybe they just tough it out and they play. But we found out right here in this area that hookworms get in the skin, get in the bloodstream, ultimately into the intestines, and cause very serious disease and sometimes death. And we can turn it around by just simply giving them shoes.
Something as simple as a pair of shoes can really change a child's life. This is a happy place today. Look at this face. Who wouldn't want to give her a gift for Christmas? So thank you so much. On behalf of her family, those who love her, I think you put the biggest smile on her face that we've seen all day. So thank you. Thank you for the gift of shoes. Thank you for the gift of life. You go run around. So we're coming close to the end of our Christmas Shoes and Smiles season. And you're probably thinking, well, isn't it a little early to be talking about Christmas? Well, no, absolutely not, because we want to get these shoes to these children in time for Christmas. You know, so often Christmas has just become commercialized in our country. It's all about what can I get? And then we end up with a pile of stuff we don't need. So I want to invite you into this glorious adventure of giving and the impact that that makes in your own life. You know, for just $3.60, we can send a pair of shoes to a child. I mean, that's absolutely nothing. And so I think, as a family, why don't you take this on as a project? Encourage your little ones to give a little bit of their allowance, to think that they're going to impact a child's life in a country that's... You can show them where it is in the map and say, look at the difference you made. So I'm just inviting you to join us. And also, we do Christmas smiles. Children born in some countries with cleft lip or cleft palate, they're almost looked on as cursed by God. Can you imagine, as a mum or a dad, not being able to see your child smile? We can change that. $500, and we're able to provide surgery and a new life to these children if we all do it together, Randy.
Yeah, and you know, I know Toby's message has really impacted a lot of people, and we want to offer you his book, Not Yet, as some hope, as some encouragement as we head towards this Christmas season. I know that in itself can be difficult for a lot of people. So if you're one who just needs a little hope and encouragement, or you know someone that needs it, request this book today. Today, I think probably the only day you'll be able to get this on the program. But when you do that, here's what I want you to hear. We are offering some hope and encouragement to you, because you are offering some hope and encouragement to others around the world. That's what we are about here at Life Today. We want to bless you, and we want you to bless others. And so we invite you into this moment. And Sheila mentioned the low cost of the shoes. I mean, for $180, we can put 50 pairs of shoes on 50 children, and it will change their lives. It's something so simple. It really does impact not just their health, but it just puts a smile on their face. And then, of course, the surgeries. Average about $500 for a corrective surgery for the cleft lip, the cleft palate, which literally puts a smile on a child's face. But here's what I just want you to hear today. We, as God's people, we are His hands, His feet. We are His expression of love and everything, every great quality that God is on this earth. And we do it when we reach out and we meet people's practical needs. That's what I'm asking you today to do online, on the phones. And, you know, $36 for 10 pairs of shoes, $1,000 for a couple of surgeries or a surgery and some shoes, $10,000, if that's what God has blessed you with and put on your heart. It's just answering the call to be the body of Christ and to offer that hope and encouragement around the world. Do it now.
Poverty is a killer, and because of it, children needlessly suffer, not only from a lack of food and clean water, but also from a lack of things we often take for granted, like a simple pair of shoes. Far too many children living in extreme poverty have never owned a new pair of shoes. And while that may seem minor in light of all their needs, walking with bare feet puts them at risk of life-threatening infections and disease that could lead to crippling consequences and even death. By responding today, you will help secure and make ready 150,000 Christmas shoes to be shipped and delivered to children around the world just in time for the holidays. Your gift of $36 will help provide 10 pairs of shoes. A gift of $72 will help provide 20 pairs. And a gift of $180 will help provide 50 pairs of Christmas shoes for children in need. As a thank you for your gift of support, be sure to request this beautifully crafted blue crystal shoe ornament, a treasure to display at each Christmas. With your gift of $100 or more, you may also request this keepsake boxed set of all life's Christmas shoe ornaments. Finally, please consider a gift of $1,000 or more to help provide 275 pairs of shoes or two children with corrective cleft lip or palate surgeries, and you may request the beautiful A Mother's Strength bronze sculpture. Please call, write, or make your gift online today.
You know, I'm standing here with these children, and they're just a small example of children all over the world that they deserve to be considered and loved and cared for. And we have an opportunity to do that right now among these children and those around the world, to put some shoes on their feet, to give them a chance in life. And I ask you to help us do that. It's just a simple request, but a very urgent and important one. Please join with us. You'll get such great joy out of it. I know you will. God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Keep calling. And as Randy said, for any gift at all, we'll be happy to send you Toby's book, Not Yet. We're all living in the not yet, but Jesus wants to be very present in the not yet.
Absolutely.
And we're so grateful to you. Thank you so much for being our guest.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank
great
you
for, to be here.
Thank you for sharing your heart and just for encouraging so many people. Thank you guys for watching. Everyone out there watching live today, join us again next time right here for more words of hope, more words of encouragement, more life.
Tomorrow on Life Today, author and speaker Susie Larson helps us feel and trust in God's presence and stay strong in these troubling times. Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.